Welcome to the Activation Podcast, brought to you by the Conscious Resistance Network. I'm your host, Derek Bros. In every episode of this podcast, we're going to explore solutions in the areas of health, permaculture, growing your own food, technology. We'll be interviewing guests who are providing important solutions that are more important than ever in this time we are living in. The Activation Podcast is focused on bringing you cutting-edge solutions to empower humanity. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Activation Podcast. This is a really special episode, I think, because it seems like a lot of you are interested in this conversation. Whenever I was preparing to speak to today's guest, I put it out to my audience and asked you guys, do you have any questions for this man? Would you like to probe his brain in any way? And we've got a lot of questions, both from myself and from the audience. So I'm excited to see where today's conversation goes. Please welcome to the show, Del Bigtree. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Derek. Thanks for having me today. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, man, it's been, I feel like I've been wanting to catch up with you for a while. We happened to be at the same event back in May at the UI Media, the event in Atlanta, and that was a great time. It was good to connect with you there and get to talk a little bit more. And as I mentioned to you then, and maybe some people who follow my work from years ago, remember that I first met Del in Houston in 2014, I want to say, during some of the first vax tours when you guys were hosting.
2016.
Yeah, and you guys were hosting screenings around the country, and I went to the Houston one. We had some council members actually willing to come, you know, listen to what you guys had to say. So that was cool. And then obviously your work has just continued to grow, the work through Vax and then the second movie as well, on into what you're doing now with the High Wire and the Informed Consent Action Network. So, you know, it's just been great to see that message continue to resonate with people. So I want to get into a lot of that today, and maybe we can, you know, just probe a little deeper than maybe people have heard you speak before. But perhaps before we get into some of the, you know, the fun conversations as far as all the details around vaccines and all that stuff, could you share whatever you'd like about, you know, I've heard you share your origin story, so to speak, you know, your bio, but, you know, really, what is there anything in your background that you feel like primed you to get involved in? First the doctors and then now the work you're doing? Like, did you have an interest in film and production at a young age?
Yeah, I mean, that was where I started. Whenever anyone wants me to say, like, where does this story start for me? My mind flashes all the way back to my childhood. I had really awesome parents, pulled me out of school, like when I was in fourth grade, and homeschooled me until I went back into high school. And they really wanted to instill in me, I think, my individuality. They saw me starting to make decisions for myself based on what my friends wanted or were saying. And they're like, we're raising leaders in this family. And so I think that sort of puts me in the center of this. At about the age of seven, I remember I wanted to get into filmmaking. It was actually the movie Rocky that I would say changed my life. You're going to sort of come at it from a filmic perspective. That was the first time my mother and father were in theater in New York. And so I grew up, I was acting and on stages and doing things like that from a very, very young age. But I remember after that film was the first time my dad sat down with me. And instead of just the film as a story, started talking about how it was edited, the music choices, and how a movie was made. And I was just fascinated by that. So that really was a goal from that moment on. I ended up going to a vocational film school up in Vancouver, Canada, after I got out of high school, and then, you know, made my way to New York, where I did some theater acting and directing, and then ultimately to Los Angeles, where eventually I sort of backed my way into television. I wanted to be making films. I was making short films and music videos and all of those things. And then a friend of mine called me one day, because I mean, ultimately, I was waiting tables for like 20 years supporting my creative ambitions. And I had a friend say, you know, we need an extra camera guy on the Dr. Phil show. You want to join us? And paid a hell of a lot better than waiting tables did for that weekend. And that really put me on a journey, if you will. I ended up working freelance for CBS and the Dr. Phil show, and then ultimately became an on-staff field producer for the Dr. Phil show. Then they created the Doctor's television show for CBS. I went there and then moved up to producing, which was sort of producing one of the episodes every single week. There was like seven teams that did that. So it wasn't my plan, but I remember there was a moment while I was working on the Doctor's television show where I was deep in this medical journal reading this really intricate study on sort of blood work and things like that. And I remember just how passionate I suddenly was about it and excited about trying to make this science make sense to an audience and really feeling at home in that. And I remember just checking myself saying, man, I wish I could go back and visit my 18-year-old self who thought he was going to be the next Steven Spielberg and say, actually, in your future, you're going to be reading medical journals and making that understandable to people. I was laughing to myself, and it's grown from there. From that show, obviously, I got involved with the vaccine conversation and Vaxxed, the movie, the Vaxxed from Cover Up to Catastrophe, which a lot of people would say has sort of ignited this revolution, if you will, against, medical tyranny or pharmaceutical tyranny. And then from there, the conversations, I mean, I was just in at that point. I was just so interested in the story. At that point, it started out with a whistleblower at the CDC that had said they'd committed scientific fraud in the vaccine safety studies, especially around the MMR vaccine, the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine. And this question, did it cause autism or not? That was the center point of Vaxxed, the movie. But as I traveled the country with that movie, so many people were coming up and we were videotaping after every screening, just all these parents that want to tell their story of vaccine injury. And I started hearing every single vaccine was being blamed for somebody's injury, like a flu shot killed our baby, or our daughter has been paralyzed ever since she got a Gardasil HPV vaccine, or really popular since the film was about autism. Parents would say, my child never got to the MMR vaccine. My child regressed into autism after the DTaP vaccine, the diphtheria, tetanus, and acellular pertussis. And it was because I was hearing all of these stories that, and people would ask me, like, I just watched your film, Del. Is it only the MMR is a problem? Because that was like the center of the film. And though I was hearing all these anecdotal stories, I really wanted to understand the vaccine program altogether. And that's when I started my nonprofit, the Informed Consent Action Network. And then ultimately, I brought in a legal team and started suing the government because there's liability protections around this product. You can't sue the manufacturers. So you don't get to reveal the same information you would know about, say, talcum powder that just lost a $3 billion lawsuit for having hid that they knew asbestos was in the product, or Vioxx, which ended up killing, somewhere between 100,000 and 500,000 people with heart attacks. And because you could sue those products, you could see that they always knew in their internal memos that it could cause heart attacks and hid that from the public. We can't get to that information because of the liability protections. So I brought in a great legal team to start digging up what we could and bringing lawsuits against the government. So we've won against the National Institute of Health, the FDA, Health and Human Services, the CDC. We're even looking at a case right now, sort of stepping out of vaccines in the USDA and all these food issues we're now seeing in America. So, I'm a journalist. I suppose I get attacked by journalists like the New York Times and stuff saying you're not a journalist, you're an activist. So I don't know where that line is crossed. And I don't care. I think the show that I do, the highwire.com, is a very unique experience. People that watch it get brought up to date on the latest breaking science from around the world. We have an international team gathering that information, and we're fully transparent. So everything we talk about, we send out in a newsletter every week on Monday. If you watch my show on Thursday, if you're on our email list, you get to read the actual studies I'm referencing. We're calling that the high wire protocol. I'm demanding that all of the news agencies that want to say I'm spreading misinformation, I'd like them to follow my lead and show me your work, show me your science, show me where your information is coming from. We've begun to accept that because an expert says something, that means it's true. I believe that's lazy journalism. Experts don't know anything. And a lot of times they're either lying or they are a part of really an ideology and they don't even realize it. But when you ask them, it's very rare that they can provide substantive proof of their perspectives. And we've seen this through COVID now and coming out the other side of it, how little they know, how little they knew, how much bravado they used in trying to convince us that they knew everything. And now they're reeling in the mistakes that they've made.
Yeah, Del, you said so much good stuff there. I'm going to hit a couple points. And one thing that, I mean, I think you might have already touched on this, but do you feel, the terminology in the community, right, is waking up. Do you feel your work from the doctors leading into Vaxxed was kind of your waking up experience, starting to question things. You know, like you said, you started with maybe just focusing on the MMR shots and then kind of expanding to like hearing more stories of, you know, beyond just this one particular vaccine. Like, was that the issue, or has this been the issue that for you has been part of a what appears from the outside a larger awakening taking place in your life the last couple of years?
Yeah, I mean, look, as I said, I had very conscious parents, and they raised me to always question authority. So I'm not designed like many that I see around me to just accept the narrative I'm being told. So I didn't really need to wake up to the fact that people lie, that governments lie, that you can't trust the news. I was raised to believe that. But what I did wake up to was the deceit and where it was coming from and how it's done. I had been exposed to some of it. I mean, you have to understand, I was a very challenging producer already on the doctor's television show. I was pushing the envelope of what a daytime medical talk show should have been talking about, because I had real questions, and I brought those questions by bringing in stories that, you know, about acupuncture instead of a sedative or a drug in surgery, which made me, ironically, in a very medically based talk show, I was sort of challenging the medical establishment, but I was the highest rated producer because people were fascinated by the things that I was fascinated by, which was really cool. And as an artist, you get excited when you start seeing that if I pursue the things I'm really interested in, the audiences are interested in it too. I mean, I think there's people that may be interested in things that just doesn't relate and no one cares, and it's very hard to have success in media. I've had success because I think I'm asking questions that deep down people are feeling. But up until this vaccine conversation, where I think I really woke up is I think if you asked any of my friends, I was an outspoken, loudmouth, progressive, liberal, environmentalist that, you know, believed the Democratic Party had the answers and the Republicans were a bunch of, you know, earth-killing, money-grubbing, you know, egomaniacs or something like that. And really, that's what has been torn apart, and is understanding. You know, now I would say I'm politically marooned. I'm not going to say, oh, I've jumped and I've become a Republican. But the underpinnings of what I thought I was a part of and understanding the politics of the world around me, that is where I woke up and realized that the very people and the ideals that I thought I was being raised with, which were to celebrate freedom of speech, which was what I was told was a liberal belief. That those are the people that were actually trying to shut us down. When I look around with COVID or all these issues, you know, all of the yoga, you know, masters and the organic food eating, you know, spring water drinking, Whole Foods moms ended up being the biggest, you know, pharma pushing vaccine Nazis we've ever seen. And so that's where I've really, through my investigation and a deep research on this topic, that's what's really been a part of my wake up to what really is motivating the world around me.
Yeah, and I think that you talk about there's something that many people have experienced, I'm sure. And I think also, like you said, Del, you're asking questions that people resonate with. I think the experience you just described there, that probably a large portion of your audience has been along on that journey for you. Because I can say again, like when I, in 2016, when I went to cover, hey, there's this vax documentary coming to town. And I don't know if you remember that it was supposed to premiere at the Houston International Film Festival, and they actually got it shut down. I did some investigating back then, and I remember that whole thing. But when I went there, it was a lot of, kind of soccer mom, suburban mothers, some with husbands there that, yeah, might consider themselves kind of liberal people, or maybe at that time might have. And I think a lot of people now are what, you know, sometimes referred to as politically homeless. And I'm curious, after that journey, do you still have faith in government, or maybe more specifically, do you have faith in the people's ability to use that institution? Do you think it's still a valuable institution, or we should start thinking of, you know, other ways to arrange ourselves, organize our lives?
You know, what I would say to that, you know, because I've gone to Anarchapulco a few times, and just the idea of being, you know, related to, is it anarchist? And then, you know, a volunteerist, and trying to understand these terms that I've never sort of wrapped my head around before. I will say this, that at the moment, what I believe is beautiful about what I call the American experiment is the Constitution of the United States, our Bill of Rights, our Declaration of Independence. And I believe that our founding fathers, in many ways, what I would say is, though we tend to focus on them as flawed individuals, I truly look at those documents now in a way that I never did. I used to think, what difference? They're it's old news. It's out of date. It has no relevance to my life. I look at it now a bit like I would sort of look at the Bible, in that I truly look at those now as divine documents in a way that maybe came through flawed men, but I believe it transcends those human beings. And if we really look at the principles of that, and if we could figure out a way to get our, you know, republic back to those founding principles, and maybe perhaps rip away all of the amendments and everything. And we've just been having an army of self-aggrandizing politicians through, you know, generations now, writing law after law after law after law. I think we've just made a mess of this thing, and it's just got a crust of stupidity on top of it. So what I would say is, somehow we need to, you know, tear the scabs off. We got to tear this crust off of this thing. And if we could get back to what America looked like from our founding fathers' perspective, I think that is, in my mind, I still think it's the best attempt at a way to arrange humanity and society in a way that we need the least amount of laws necessary to just keep each other from killing each other, but expressing our freedoms and our individuality. Now, is that pie in the sky? How the hell would that happen? I mean, I think that's where the conversations need to be. I, you know, for instance, I'm very focused on the CDC, the FDA, Health and Human Services. When I come from my environmental, roots, which is I want the government to protect humanity from industries that take advantage of us, that poison our riverways upstream, and we are all getting cancer down here. I tend to think that this libertarian value, which is where I probably align with the most, still comes up short, in that these people can't afford to sue Monsanto or to sue, you know, 3M or any of these things. That's where the government is supposed to be there to protect the individuals, the citizens, from industries that are taking advantage of their power and their financial place. Unfortunately, and so I do believe regulations and regulatory agencies are important, but, you know, what I'll say now is, when my friends would say to me, when Donald Trump was in office, all my liberal friends from Boulder, Colorado, where I grew up, they'll say, well, Del, Donald Trump is going to destroy all of our regulatory agencies and all the great work we've done. And I would say, I hope he does. I hope he does. I hope he just dismantles them and destroys them, because at least then American citizens will recognize you are all on your own. Because here's the point. If your CDC is being run by Pfizer and Sanofi Aventis, then you're not being protected from those companies. You are being controlled by them. If your EPA is being run by Exxon, then what protections do you really have on your environment? If, you know, the FDA has got lawyers and ex, you know, heads of Monsanto that's poisoning all of your crops, how good do you think your food system is? You know, and, you know, you can go on with, yeah, FAA and FCC. I mean, all of these things. In the end,
they're all captured agencies.
They've all been captured. And so that's, yeah, what we've got to figure out how to undo. And our founding fathers warned us this would happen, which is why I'd like to get back to what they dreamed this republic should look like.
Yeah, and well, so as somebody who also spoke at Anarchapulco and was there a couple times when you were there, and who's, you know, a lot of my activism, journalism has been spent around the American libertarian movement, not necessarily the Libertarian Party, but more of the activist kind of philosophical movement. And, you know, there are people, I will say, for anybody who's hearing what you're saying and maybe feels similar, like, hey, I lean more towards libertarianism, but I see some gaps. You know, there are people who call themselves there's some different terms like bleeding heart libertarians or left libertarians or environmental libertarians, people who still take that, like, I believe in the liberty, the individual self-ownership, bodily autonomy, but I also think that, you know, we should find a way to use the market to protect the environment, for example, as you said. So, you know, I think that sometimes people from the outside don't understand that that political philosophy, like any philosophy, you know, is more complex than just like, hey, do whatever you want and everything will work out great. But I, you know, I appreciate that. And yeah, I mean, I think that the conversation should go around that so many people in the recent years, I mean, your work focuses on the CDC, as you mentioned, NIH, FDA, and then I've done a lot of work on 5G and the FCC being captured by big wireless. I mean, we could go through agency by agency and see this. And I think this is what is causing more and more people to say, well, maybe I am an anarchist. Maybe I am a libertarian, or maybe, you know, we need to rethink the whole government thing altogether, because we're recognizing, as you know, I think as well, that we've just, you know, it's just a jumbled mess, as you put it. And I don't really see personally how any one president or one single election or even several elections could undo all of the, you know, entanglement that we have between corporations and governments. And then obviously, as you know, now this has gone to the next stage where we're at the point where they're talking about public-private partnerships on the international level, the World Economic Forum, the United Nations. And yeah, a lot of people are concerned about these talks of the Great Reset. So I think that we will continue to see that philosophical and real tangible conversation throughout the coming years as people are trying to see what lies out on the edge beyond what we, you know, what we know as government or what government could look like. Maybe we could go back to some time where we actually respect the Constitution and Bill of Rights for all people. And, you know, maybe that is possible. Maybe on the way there, we discover something better. I don't know. But I do think that that's where we should be thinking, is focusing on solutions. So I did want to inquire a little further, though, on the high wire. Yeah, go ahead.
Let me just sort of follow up there, because I think this is really the discussion of our times, especially with guys like you and I and women out there, or however you identify. You know, ultimately, I think, you know, what I have a problem with, I think we should be in deep conversations. We should be in strong debate right now about the future of this nation, what freedom means, and how we would organize ourselves in a way that perhaps would be more effective. But what I do have a problem with is when it's just bail on the system, you know, don't use it at all, don't vote. It's like starving to death on a boat and trying to figure out some way to catch a bird and assuming that there's no way you can catch a fish in the ocean. I think you still throw a line in the ocean with the hopes that there's something down there. I think we should still be involved in the system as it exists, at least to the point with get more active, try to get to politicians that you feel like are really listening to citizens and using the system where you can while we continue this conversation. I think there are good people out there, but you're right. I think the biggest problem with the political system right now is the money being infused into it. We made the great mistake. I think, you know, ironically, when I was a Democrat, Citizens United was all about Hillary Clinton getting, you know, screwed over by a documentary. But that decision by the Supreme Court was horrific for our entire political system. And now both parties are using it. Nobody is fighting it. Nobody's trying to take that industrial funding of our government, which really, in a way, is making it as close to fascism, the original form of fascism, which is an industry-driven government system, than we've ever been. We got to get the money out of this political system. If you need $1 billion to run for president of the United States and millions to run for Senate, you know, and Congress, then you're ultimately having political leaders that are going to owe their lives and their decisions to all of that giant money that put them in that place. And so that's where, no matter what we do, no matter what form of government we have, one of our problems is always going to be, as I saw one interview say, money finds a way. It doesn't matter where you start, communism, totalitarianism, you know, I would assume in some ways, anarchism, money will find a way. It finds a way to corrupt. And so you find yourself cyclically back to, how do we get back to the essence of nature and humanity?
No, I agree. And look, as somebody who does identify, if pushed or asked, as an anarchist and as a non-voter, I also agree, though, with what you said there. And in 2019, I ran for mayor of Houston. And, you know, I was actually at some point when we started to get some support, a little terrified that we might actually win. But you know, just by performing this little bit of a trick and saying, okay, I'm going to go play the game and file a piece of paper. And I had 9 main issues. You know, I took it very seriously. It wasn't a joke campaign. It was a serious campaign. We had volunteer support. I mean, we really were able to grow this grassroots campaign. But what it allowed me to do is I learned the rules. And basically, I realized, okay, if they interview any of the other candidates, they have to give me equal airtime. So that means I got on every single TV station in the city. You know, Derek Bros, the local conspiracy theorist journalist, he never got asked to speak at the old folks' home or at the local high school or at the Republican group or the Democratic group. But Derek Bros, candidate for mayor, all of a sudden I was speaking in rich neighborhoods, poor neighborhoods, white neighborhoods, black neighborhoods, the Democrat group, Republican. You know, I was getting invited everywhere, and the high school and the old folks home. And for 6 months, I had that, you know, I hijacked the signal, so to speak, and was able to get all over all the morning talk shows and all the usual places. So one of the main tenets I was running as mayor for was to talk about the vaccine issue. Specifically, I said that if I was mayor, that we would make sure there would never be a mandate in the city. And this is before COVID, because as you know, Dale, at that time, the conversation was around measles. And there was very much in Houston, this talk of like, you know, we need to vaccinate everybody. Measles are going to spread and these kinds of things. So the conversation was already there. So by just playing this little bit of a game and running for mayor, it allowed me to get on all the local media, all the morning talk shows, daytime, evening talk shows, and talk about the concerns around the shots and mandates, concerns about 5G, concerns about police surveillance, a whole range of issues that were important to me, and I think important to a lot of people. Obviously, I didn't win. I didn't become mayor of Houston, but it took me to, I felt like I learned so much about the city that I've been in my whole life. Like I went, you know, to every neighborhood and every part of town that I had never really even bothered to pay attention to. And it was a really great experience. And honestly, I might do it again next year, because I think it is just a, you know, it's an interesting way, at least one way to try to, you know, use that system to inject a real message. And, you know, it's not necessarily, I think, a path everybody should take. But I do think if people who want to play politics can go into that realm, if you can do so and you got a heart of gold and you can go in there and do some good, then, you know, more power to you. But overall, I think we should all be considering what solutions work for us. Does that mean activism in the streets, passing out flyers, talking to people, sharing shows like yours, like mine, running for office, hosting podcasts, whatever the things that connect with people. It seems like this is the time for all of us to put our energy and our focus on that. And, you know, I was curious.
I say that all the time. You know, people say, what is it I'm supposed to do, Del? I was like, you know, if you're asking me if you need to be the next Del Bigtree, like I've got that covered. I don't know what you are good at. I don't know what you're being guided to do. But what I say to people is listen to that voice inside of you. There's something you feel like you want to do. And if you don't find yourself in action, it's because you're letting your intellect and your brain talk yourself out of it. Get that judgment, you know, that sort of exterior self-judging out of your way and start actively moving in the places you feel like you make a difference. If it's, like you said, handing out a pamphlet, walking up to a pregnant woman in a grocery store and saying, you know, I noticed you're pregnant. Have you thought about the vaccine issue? And when I always use that example, I said, let me be perfectly clear. I'm not saying walk up to every pregnant woman you see. I only walk up to those where I look and I get this feeling I should talk to her. It's that feeling I'm talking about. I see plenty of pregnant women. I don't have any sense I'm supposed to talk to them. But when I get a feeling to do it, I respond. And 90% of the time, I would say, the response usually, that's so weird. I was just starting to look into that and asking some questions. I'll say, well, here's some websites you may want to check out. We're connected in a way. And I think that we're vessels for, you know, a much greater authority than ourselves or guidance or God or mind, however you need to hear that. But we need to be antennas and we need to be open to that. If we start moving in that, the correct government will form itself. The correct way we live amongst each other, nothing will stop us because we'll all be more connected to each other and to this planet that we're living through together.
Absolutely. Well, Del, I got a couple more questions for you. I know you're busy as well, so I want to get into a few more areas. One, just journalistically speaking, whether it's related to the high wire or your time prior to the high wire, what do you feel like would be the either most interesting, biggest, you know, however you want to measure that, maybe a story that really had, you know, had your jaw on the floor, either related to COVID. Obviously, I think COVID's probably the biggest story any of us have dealt with in recent memory. But in the last few years, like, is there one particular case or, you know, story that you came across that really has stuck with you?
Well, I mean, you know, off the top of my head, it's hard to sort of think if there's a specific space, but I will say this. I love this space I'm in. I love this investigation of vaccines safety. I was really lucky that I'd already built, sort of like you before the pandemic were running for mayor, I was building a media space with thehighwire.com to go after these investigations of vaccines. So that was in 2017, I started my show. The reason I find this topic so fascinating outside of COVID is it has all the trappings of what's wrong in this world. You have huge industrial finances. The most powerful lobby in America is pharma. In fact, I would say that if you look around the world, the most powerful lobby in governments around the world is pharma. Far bigger than guns, far bigger than banking. I mean, at the top of this group that's buying our politicians around the world is the pharmaceutical industry. Then you have this product that they make called vaccines that are supposed to transcend your connection to the earth. You literally are now, in their minds, born into an original sin, if you will, that you can only, by taking their vaccines, by injecting your brand new baby, can you then make the child perfect? They are bad and not whole. So this has a whole religious context. There is no concept that you were born in the image and likeness of God, which is sort of the Judeo-Christian, Jewish, and even, you know, Muslim perspective. Now pharma makes you whole. And so it's a religion unto itself. It's incredibly powerful that you have politicians being purchased by this. And then COVID comes along and world agencies and every government of the world uses this product and, you know, and the idea of for your best interest in your health, we are going to control not just, we've never seen anything like it, not just one nation in a world war or two nations against each other or a hemisphere. For the first time ever, the entire world was under attack by health ministers using government and trying to inject us with an untested product in every nation in the world. And it was only the citizens standing against a world, literally a world war brought upon us by science, supposed science and health. That is the most interesting, you know, topic of our times. I'm getting into other things. I think food and food scarcity and control of food supply is starting to play into this, using the environment, carbon credit scores, shutting down farmers, banking. Absolutely. But at the top of this, I think it is all perfectly encapsulated. It's sort of like you used to think as a little kid, if I only had to eat the same meal every day, what would it be? If I'm only allowed to report on one topic in the world every day, I would never find an end to this conversation around vaccines, the corruption, the destruction of science, the destruction of society, all in the guise of doing good for us.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's a huge topic, right? And there's never a dearth of reporting to do there. And I'm glad to hear that you're going to start including in your reporting the focus on the food aspect, because I think that, yeah, so many people are recognizing the role that that's playing. And, you know, we've got the recent farmers' protests from Denmark to the situation in Sri Lanka, you know, farmers in India and elsewhere. You know, the writing's on the wall that food is part of the agenda of control, food, health, and some of these different aspects. And I feel like that's sort of a good segue to the next couple of questions I have, which, you know, if you don't mind, we could dance around some controversy for a moment. So, you know, you're a man, obviously, at the level you're at, the people you're reaching, Highwire is reaching millions of people. Clearly, you know, the mainstream is going to come for you. You, among many of others, have been attacked, accused of spreading misinformation and disinformation. I'm not really interested in those claims. I think the audience here and the audience at the Highwire is intelligent enough to decide who's really misinformation. But I did have a question that I thought maybe you could shed some light on, that, you know, one of the concerns that is out there in general, as you mentioned, money and politics, right, and the influence of money. I'm curious if, because this is one of the other claims brought up against you, not you necessarily, but against ICANN, the Informed Consent Action Network, funding over the years from the Sells Foundation or from investment firm T. Rowe Price, substantial amount of money, millions of dollars over the years to Informed Consent Action Network. Does, as much as you feel like sharing, does that sort of investment, and those are years past, I want to make clear, but does that play any role in influencing the kind of stories you choose to go after or don't go after? Or did that money come with any strings attached? You know, people hear about billionaires and they tend to get concerned, like, is there influence here? You know, is Dell being asked to talk about this but not this? Do you care to shed any light on that?
Hold that thought. Hey guys, this is Derek Bros with the Activation Podcast, and I want to tell you about a new project that I recently launched. It's called the Holistic Self-Assessment Online Course, and it's based on my 2018 book, The Holistic Self-Assessment. Now, some of you guys know that I released this book based off my experiences in prison. This is essentially the culmination of the process I took myself through while I was locked up behind bars, when I began meditating, when I began journaling, and really starting to heal my trauma and begin to align my thoughts, my words, my actions, and really live in line with my true purpose. So this book is meant to be a self-empowerment, self-help guide that helps you align your thoughts, words, and actions, your relationships, your habits, and make sure you are living in line with your goals and your principles. So I developed this 9-week course with the University of Reason, aka Autonomy. We put this course together for people like yourself to take it and walk through it chapter by chapter. I read the book with you. I give you tips and exercises. And there's actually two options. If you want to just do the DIY version, you can choose to work through the course yourself. If you'd like to pay a little bit of extra money, you can go ahead and get one-on-one sessions with myself, where I will counsel you and work through the book with you and answer any questions you have. So I really want to encourage you guys to check this out. The link will be in the description below where you are listening or watching. And I'll put the link to the Holistic Self-Assessment book as well, which you can download for free. And I want you to stay tuned, because we're getting ready to release the Holistic Self-Assessment audiobook, the Spanish version of the book, and an upcoming Holistic Self-Assessment 9-day challenge. So stay tuned, guys. Now let's get back to the podcast.
Well, I'll say this, that, you know, I never discuss, you know, who my donors are, who, you know, what's behind the work that we do. There have been articles out there and people can look them up, and that information is out there in its biased approach to, you know, how that story is told. But I can say this, that one of the things I'm really happy about at the current place we're at is that there's no single donor that is donating more to our nonprofit than all of the small donations that are out there. That is the greatest contributor to the work we do. I will also say this, the reason I really like the nonprofit model is the fact that nobody has ever told me what I can and cannot cover, which is different from what I experienced at CBS, where we're working for sponsors. When you are selling products with your show, and frankly, all of television, that's what it is. If you don't recognize that when you're in television, it doesn't matter if you're doing sitcoms or some Law and Order at night, or you're producing news, really, you are a placeholder for a billboard. What you recognize your job is to keep attention on that billboard so that when your entertainment leaves for a second, these people are sold products. And so those products literally pay for the work that you do. And if you do not sell those products, or you say bad things about them, and now look at the fact that pharma is, you know, the majority sponsor in most television now, up to 70% of television advertising coming from pharma, you recognize why Rachel Maddow's never going to say a bad thing about pharmaceutical products, especially vaccines, or Sanjay Gupta. They're literally working for the pharmaceutical companies. Now, I suppose that, you know, in a nonprofit model, there are groups out there that would offer a lot of money to donate to another group. And I will say there have been people that have come to me and offered large donations, but want to be a part of understanding how I'm making decisions and would I at least just update them? And I have said, and this has actually happened, I don't think that this is the nonprofit work for you then, because we are a very small team. We explore any question we want, whenever we want. We press lawsuits where we think a lawsuit should be had. We do not consult with anyone around us except our legal team and our own body of scientists and specialists around us. And we have no desire to bring in some gigantic board that is going to slow us down and be a part of what we believe is the ability to bob and weave. If we think the lawsuit isn't working, we jump to another one. We don't want to have to be stuck in one position. So I am very happy to say that whatever anyone reads, I have never, and I can say this very clearly. I've ever been told what stories I can and cannot cover, and that is the beauty. And by the way, it's a bit of it's an issue, right? When you're a nonprofit, everything I do is transparent. All of the financials are out there. What I get paid is out there. I can't really make political statements, so I have to stay in a very unbiased perspective, or I can hurt that nonprofit space. And so it's funny you brought that up, because right now I really want to build a network, and I'm really grappling with leaving, you know, sure, a network could be very profitable, but as soon as you start bringing investors and investing in to all of the equipment and the people that would have to be involved and sort of creating a network, all of those things are partners now that are now going and have to be allowed to weigh in on what you do and say. And I hate that idea. So sure. I'm really thinking, is it possible? And I'm being totally transparent right now. Is it possible to build a Netflix or a Fox Nation or something like that that is completely still a nonprofit? And pull that off, because I like the model so much for exactly that reason. You donate, you get nothing back. I'm not controlling your money. You are simply supporting what you see us doing and just say, I love what you're doing. I'm just giving my money away essentially towards that goal.
Sure. Yeah, I appreciate you addressing that, Del. You know, and I want the audience to be aware in case...
I've never been asked that question. It's a very good question.
Well, that's what I strive to do, ask new questions. But just for anybody who's not aware, I mean, this is a historical, what Del's describing here is a historical issue with journalism forever, since the very beginning. You know, as you said, it's either going to be, I get to work for the New York Times and I'll get paid well, and there's going to be a newspaper or website with ads, whether I like it or not, and that's how I'm going to get paid. Or you do journalism through, you know, nonprofit funding, philanthropy. Sometimes philanthropists will fund certain journalistic outlets. So that's pretty much it. It's either you're going to get nonprofit funding from philanthropists, perhaps billionaires, or you're going to do advertising. And nobody likes to visit the websites with the ugly ads on them. So, a lot of people don't want to shell out a dollar a month to make sure the show can happen. So you have to figure out a model that works. So I just wanted to, you know, give you a chance to speak on that, because yeah, people will say what they like in the absence of, you know, your own views on that.
And let's be honest, no matter what I say, we tend to be conspiracy minded. So they're going to go on and think what they want, but they're probably, and what I'm working towards is a model where it's really more of a membership. I think of those small donors as the goal. If everyone, and this is the issue we deal with, if everyone that watched The High Wire, 4 to 6 million people every week, if all of those people would just contribute and say, you know what, I love what I'm getting here, I love the transparency, I'll give a dollar, or I'll give $5, or what are they giving Netflix, then nobody would need to, you would need no larger sponsors or anything. Part of the issue that you and I grapple with is the enrollment of humanity right now, our desire to actually engage, where we don't just sit back and hope the world is fixed by people like you and I, but actually those donations, just the act of taking one of your videos or my videos and sharing it with someone else is an empowering move that a minuscule percentage of who we're talking to actually take part in. And I think if we're going to change the world, our goal is to try and get people engaged and start feeling what it feels like, even if it's sending you a dollar or me a dollar so that we can do the work we're doing. It's not that I need your money. I actually want you to feel what it feels like to be able to revel in the successes or the lawsuits we win or the story we break. You can be a part of that. And so if we can wake that up in humanity, then you're in the freest space of all, which is there's just so many people, you know, supporting you that no one can even ask to control the message. That would be the ideal.
On an email or send it to a friend in a text. Hey, I saw this video. I really like you to watch it. Like, I felt like in the beginning of the internet, or maybe 10 years ago, 15 years ago, that was really the excitement of like, I found something new. I want to share it. And maybe the censorship has made people a little frustrated, but I got a couple more questions that I want to wrap up with. One of them is let's continue our look at some controversial issues. Now, some of our audience, your audience, my audience, a lot of the freedom health movement would say that the biggest story of 2020 to now is that there are no such thing as viruses, that COVID-19 doesn't exist. And this is a controversial topic, obviously. I know you've interviewed Dr. Andrew Kaufman. I've interviewed him a couple times, Dr. Thomas Cowan. I interviewed David and Don Parker, who wrote the book, What Makes You Ill? Why Everything You Thought You Knew About Disease is Wrong. And frankly, I'm not 100% convinced in their, their views. I do think there's some interesting work. I just want to point this out over at fluoridepeel.ca. I can't remember the woman's name, but she's filed a bunch of open records requests to different agencies trying to seek, proof of isolation. And so far, the requests are saying no. I don't think that's a smoking gun or anything of that sort. But there are some interesting things that don't seem to add up. Lots of people are just curious on your thoughts on this. Is this something that you feel is like too far off to take the conversation, or it's a worthy area of exploring?
It depends on what our goal is, right? Like, what are we attempting to achieve right now in this moment? I think that, so let me to just give a bias. I grew up going to no doctors at all. I never saw a doctor in my life until I was an adult on my own and sort of strayed a little bit away from the radical way that I was raised. I was raised with this idea: there is no such thing as disease. All health and all sickness is in your mind. Clear your mind, control your mind, you control your body. That is what I was raised with. I have, I don't sort of relay that on my show because I think I've been, through a wild life experience that took me onto a medical talk show, the doctors, where I, sold medical ideas and the advancements of medicine to the world. And I was fascinated by it. I'm not against doctors. And some of the growing up for me was realizing, there really is a place for an ER doctor and a surgeon. There are places where these guys really work. I mean, I was in there in the ORs. I've watched miracles. I've watched lives saved by doctors. And so there's a balance here. There's somewhere that we need to understand. What I will say is, if there's anything we understood from COVID, is that nobody actually understands the immune system at all. I don't think we understand viruses. I don't think we understand bacteria. We're just now hearing about, other issues of prions. And when you really, really dive deep, when you really start pressing, and I get to talk to the biggest scientists there are, Dr. Robert Malone, Dr. Geert Van den Bosch. I've had deep, not just in front of the camera, but hours and hours of discussion behind some of the greatest minds in germ theory as you know it. There are places where I feel like there's an indoctrination there, that there is a foundation of assumptions that the science has been done when it really hasn't. When it comes to the vaccines, I am more, I would say, because I've been in a 5-year investigation of the entire vaccine program, when it comes to a lot of these world-renowned scientists, not to compare myself, they're brilliant, well-educated, but when I start talking about what I now know about the vaccine program, how they were tested, how we got here, none of them have ever heard it before. They have no idea. They're shocked to find that there's never been a double-blind, randomized control study of any single vaccine that we give our children in the licensing phase. So what that shows you is that these guys that are virologists, vaccinologists, don't even know their own history of how that product came to be and how it's getting onto the market. So take that to then germ theory or all these ideas. How many assumptions are they basing their understanding? Because pharma funded the university they're at. There's this religion, if you will, or ideology that they're raised in, that vaccines and germs, and this is how you save the world. I think ultimately we'll find that vaccines, though came from a good idea and a good place, will end up being one of the greatest harms to humanity and society that ever took place. That's going to be shocking for everyone that believed in germ theory. On the other hand, I will say that there's this terrain theory discussion that's going on that I think deserves a lot of funding. I think it's very interesting, looking at, what's inside of our body. I will say where I feel aligned with Kaufman and Cowan and all of these folks is I believe that, theoretically, if I had a perfectly, healthy, terrain that was just immaculate, I once went to a natural practitioner as a kid. Like, we would go to a homeopath, chiropractor. This guy was like a real guru in Boulder. And he once said to me, think of health as like centrifugal energy. And if you're really healthy, that you're a force right in the middle. But as you start drinking Coca-Cola and eating bad food and drinking alcohol, your centrifugal force gets further and further out from you, where you have no power in you. And he said to me once, this person, if they existed, could smoke a plutonium cigarette and it wouldn't do anything to them. I'll never forget that he said that. And it really goes to terrain. I believe if you were focused on your terrain and have a perfectly healthy terrain, I don't believe you are catching viruses and bacteria and things like that. Now, where I differ is this idea that viruses or bacteria only come from inside of you out, that you never have them come from the outside, breathe them in, that they are only exosomes, if you will, that just, I mean, we don't need a whole lesson here. Hopefully your audience is up on this, but this idea that in order for my body, which is toxic because of 5G, because of the pollution in the air, because of the bad food I'm eating and the fluoride in the water, I'm becoming toxic. So my body is creating first bacteria in order to, you know, create an illness that then helps me sweat it out or get it out. If that doesn't work, my body goes to the next step and creates viruses that come from my inside in a way to sort of light my fire to burn this stuff out and get it out of my body. I think that there is truth that that can happen. If I was to be honest, my mom would say things like that when I was a kid. Like, when I was starting to have lots of health problems, I would eventually develop a fever. My mom let it run its course. And she said, oftentimes you were 2 inches taller the next day. You were a different person. Maybe you were being really obnoxious, and something inside of you, you came and you grew out of that. And so from inside of you is something. So it's not that far from me. I know this is a long answer, but it is the biggest thing I get questioned with all the time. And so I'm right there with the idea that that can happen. Now, is it the only way we have disease? That's where I really have trouble with this concept and where it falls short. Number one, they just, this whole...
I think that they're not mutually exclusive. That's the one thing that people should take away, right? Like, it doesn't... It can be terrain and germ, right?
I agree. And I think where it's this only one place is where we run into several problems. Number one, I'm a science-based person now. There's no evidence of this. There is sort of the lack of evidence, which can be a step towards understanding something, but someone needs to fund science and show us then, why is it when a town gets measles, everyone gets it? Why is it when my kid, when I hear there's a cold at the preschool, then my child comes home with a sniffly nose, and then my wife and I 3 days later all have sniffly noses? Now, I read Cowan's book, The Contagion Myth, and he would say that that's resonance, right? That it's like a guitar string, two guitars next to each other, you pluck one string, that same string resonates in the other guitar. Great theory, but I need something outside of guitars to that. Now, how do you prove that in humanity? And lastly, so I need more evidence. I want more funding there. But here's my biggest issue. My biggest issue is that we are in the fight of our lives for humanity right now. We just got locked down because of germ theory. They just rushed a vaccine through without testing to sort of supplant their control using germ theory. And I have battled that on the high wire every day, showing the flaws in their science of germ theory, where they're wrong about COVID, where they needed to do proper testing and they did not. And I believe we've won. I believe we don't have, you know, tracking systems through vaccine passports on our phones. You know, it was a rough 2 years, but they are reeling. The CDC is trying to admit fault without actually accepting fault. Tony Fauci's running for the hills. And through all of this, as I've been going through this, standing on stages, showing that their own science does not add up to their own theories. When I would come off stage and someone would say, well, Dell, everything you're saying is a lie because there's no such thing as a germ. You're lying to people. And I would say this, look, we're winning right here. You know, in order to get into a terrain theory discussion, you're asking me to leave the football stadium that we're not allowed to have this conversation in, the stadium everybody's already packed into, that we got to go to a different stadium, put together different sets of teams, and set up a whole new set of rules. Now, that may be what we're evolving to in the future, but if we do that right now, in the middle of this conversation, if I walk into a senator or a congressman congressperson, you know, or governor's office and say, you know, there's no such thing as a germ or a virus, that door is immediately closed. Those eyes are closed. If I go in and say, do you realize that COVID-19 is not the deadly illness that you thought it was? Do you know that it only has a death rate of 0.27%? Do you think it was realistic to destroy the economy of your state around a 0.27% death rate when flu is oftentimes right in that same range? I'm speaking all germ theory, but that is the only school we came from. That governor, that senator is listening to me and saying, oh, those are interesting points. Do you realize that you didn't properly safety test this vaccine? That we now have systems showing that those vaccines are causing injury? All of that is comprehensible and we're winning in this space. I think it's inane to think that we are going to get to the other side of this attack on our sovereignty by changing all of the rules and the playbook and the stadium and the players in the middle of this. We lose the whole game if we do that. And that's frankly my greatest frustration with this right now. This is not the time
really
to play
appreciate that,
to really lay that out.
Well, you know, in-depth answer. I do appreciate it. I think that everybody who was bugging me to ask that, hopefully you're satisfied now. There you go. He's been asked. You got it. But, you know, I think also just to your last point as we wrap up here, I don't think a lot of the audience really thinks about things that perhaps people like myself and yourself do in terms of strategy. Like, I think it's just like, here's this one point. I need to scream this as loud as I can and yell it at everybody and hand them my paperwork. And if they don't say that point, then clearly they're, you know, controlled or whatever. And you get wrapped up into all that. And that doesn't mean that, you know, that counterintelligence programs from the FBI don't exist. But when, as you said, we have like a movement growing and we're winning talking about the PCR, we're winning talking about the low death rate, you know, all the different points you outlined. But then to just shift it up, it doesn't mean there's not a time and a place for that conversation. But I do think people who are trying to say, if you're not saying this, then you're not saying anything. Because I get a lot of that now as well. If I do a report on COVID, you know, that's the first comment. It's like, well, you didn't say there was no virus, so your whole report is meaningless. It's like, you're not seeing how this information could help you reach new people instead of just focusing on this one thing that you think is going to be the one way. So anyways, I appreciate all that. Here's a lighter question, Del, from the audience. How's your food force going?
I want to just drop back because I have a good example of what, when you talk about strategy, some people think you're not telling the whole truth or, oh, so you're manipulating us. Let me be really clear. When I made Vaxxed, the film, I did a screening of everyone I worked with at CBS that would come. All of those that I knew were pro pharma and pro this, that I had disappeared from the show I was on to make this film. I said, will you come and watch it? I want your opinion. In the original Vax, before it was released to the public, there was this recurring story that the parents of these autistic children, once they recognized it was the vaccine that did it and wanted to sort of start either going to specialists to deal with that, every one of them told this story. It was really weird because every autism story was a little different. But the one thing they shared was they all said at one point, I went to the hospital to get my child's medical records and they were missing. They weren't there. This hospital, like, I don't know what happened. They disappeared. All my other kids' medical records were there, but my autistic child not. Another one of the stories, Sheila Ely, her house was ransacked. She looked through the whole place, wasn't missing jewelry, wasn't missing her watch. What was missing was her autistic son's medical records when she went to where those were. And so that was in my movie. And I will tell you, like, when you're thinking of, like, do I edit something, people will give you some comment about your film. And I always say, if it doesn't ring true, I'm not going to do anything about it. If it suddenly rings true, I'm going to listen. You know what? That sounds right. I'm going to change that. But then there's these times where you hear things multiple times that don't ring true, but so many people said it. That night, five or six people pulled me aside and said, Del, that part about the medical records disappearing makes this film seem like it's crazy. That's a crazy statement, like that there's this conspiracy around it. The rest of your film makes so much sense. That is just undermining the quality of your film. And I said to them, but it's true. It happens to be the one common denominator across all these stories. I didn't make it up. They said it without me even asking about it in interviews. And they said, I don't care, Del. It makes you seem crazy. It makes this film seem crazy. So I took it out. And because the important, what I wanted that movie to do was to grab people that thought they believed in this. I don't want you writing it off. And so those are the things that you do as journalists, right? You say, look, should we be completely transparent? If I say the whole truth and nothing but the truth, then there are things that I know nobody can handle. And people in your audience, I might go further than they ever dreamed of going into terrain theory in certain places or in my versions of those things. We've got to try and imagine who our audience is. And I'm also talking to who I am guided to talk to. There are people that want to take those people that don't believe in vaccines anymore and take them into terrain, take them into natural healing, mind healing, whatever it is. That is there. That's there for you. Please do that. I have been guided and believe that my role here is to cast the widest net possible to bring people that believe in these products and get them into the boat where they begin this journey. I don't see myself as the end of the journey in the scientific discussion. I see myself as the entry point. And what I reason I think I have millions of followers is when people come up in the airport, they say, you know, you just made it make so much sense. You seemed reasonable. Now, does that make me a bad person? I suppose it does to someone that's convinced that there's no such thing as a germ on this planet. But by the way, you have, you know, 100 new followers that came through me because they started their journey here. And so I really want people to understand I'm trying to be as transparent as I can because this is such an important issue. I'm not saying you have to cast the wide net. I'm telling you that is what I'm guided to do. I'm going to keep doing that. Other people should take this thing deeper. All right. Now your other question.
Everybody has their own role to play. Like you said, so. And Adele, I really do truly appreciate your time today. And I appreciate that in-depth answer, both the response to the funding of ICANN and to this question. But yes, I did seriously have a question from somebody asking how we have a mutual friend that I met through your program, Jim Gale. I'll be seeing him in about a week or so. And we're working together on some projects. So I know that you got a food force going the past year or so. How's that going? How is everything coming along?
Food Forest is going, you know, the fruit trees we planted are doing awesome. We had an issue, you know, that we planted we had just moved onto this property. We planted right next to what was a house that was turning in our offices. That house has proved to be a money pit. We got rain damage that ran in from the yard the Food Forest was in and flooded our entire building. And so we had to tear up, you know, half of our food forest in order to put in French drains to take care of that building. I've been discussing with Jim Gale, and we're going to have an opportunity. He's been amazing to come back out and move that food forest to a space where it's, you know, first of all, can be grown without being torn up again and has a space. And so what I would say is the parts of it we didn't tear up are beautiful. We haven't given it the full opportunity because we put it in the wrong place, not due to, you know, necessarily the yard we picked, but the position our building was in. And so that is as transparent as I can be on that. What I will say is this, that having the Food Forest on the show, and it's a show that moves so many people and should have, it changed the way I was planting at my home. I was being so precious about making sure that this is the box with the tomatoes, and this is the box with the green beans, and this is the, and what I appreciated was just let it grow, throw it down. This idea he had that what works in your climate will find its way and what doesn't won't. And so I started approaching my own garden that way, and I found that to be incredibly freeing. It took away panic, and that has been very effective. So the concept of Food Forest, I think, is very powerful. Specifically, I'm working with them to come out and let's do it right and put it in place because I want people to come and visit our campus and be able to see what a great idea that is.
Awesome. Yeah, we need food forests everywhere.
Indeed.
Well, we've been talking with Del Bigtree of the High Wire Informed Consent Action Network, and this has been a great conversation, Del. I do appreciate the transparency and just being willing to dive into some of these things for me. My final question for you this evening is, and I think I know the answer, but you know, you're great at answering these questions. Are you optimistic? And if you are optimistic, can you share some of that optimism with the audience who might feel a little less than optimistic?
Well, you know, I think I'm, you know, pathologically optimistic, I suppose, is sort of how I'm wired. I've always had optimism. I wouldn't be here if I didn't. I have two beautiful children and a beautiful wife, great family. And if I truly believe we couldn't win this, I would be hiding right now. I would be focusing my energy on getting out of the public eye. Instead, I am here because I truly believe the power is in the people and that the people have the ability to wake up to the truth and to do something about it. I feel like that in many ways. ways that idea has been vindicated or proven out over these last couple of years when you see where we're now standing. We now have rejection of the COVID vaccine by the majority of people. When we look at in America, the booster shot has only been taken up by 30 or so percent of those who are eligible for it, meaning even those who believed in the vaccines that got the original vaccines, 70% of them are rejecting the CDC's recommendations. Those are huge wins. Those are huge difference makers. When you talk about running in Houston on the idea that we shouldn't have mandated vaccines, this is the place where people attack me. I am not here to eradicate vaccines from the planet. Then I think I would be doing exactly what they're doing to us, pushing my morality, my ethics, and my ideals upon you. If you want to inject yourself with some crazy concoctions of live bacteria and viruses and aluminum and, spike proteins, be my guest, man. It's a free country. You cannot force that stupid ritual upon me. And so there's a huge poll out of Iowa just about 2 months ago, I think, where they polled the voting body there. Do you believe in not just the COVID vaccine, which is why this is interesting, but what is your confidence in the necessity of a mandated childhood vaccine program? Only 34% of registered voters believe that vaccines should be mandated on children any longer, down from about a 60% belief right before COVID. That shows you a huge momentum swing. Does that mean we're done here? It's over? No, what it means is there's hope. It means that we can actually have an effect on these conversations. I remember thinking with Donald Trump's first election, the first time he ran, when he won, I was on the fence. I'll admit I didn't vote for him at the moment, but there was a lot that I appreciated about what he was representing. And I remember having a real sense of hope the moment he won, because this is what I thought. The entire machine of government that you and I are both very aware of and wonder if we can ever get around it, that machine, I am sure, manipulates voting machines. I am sure there are problems, even if it's personnel and people. Come on, I was a Democrat when we were complaining about the dangling Chad. You don't have to be a conservative. Suddenly, they're the only ones that have ever complained about voter rigging. It's happened on every side. We should be aware of it. But clearly, there was no Republican that wanted Donald Trump. There was definitely no Democrat that wanted him. He was a rogue outsider that wasn't going to play ball the way we were all used to. The fact that he won that election, I remember thinking to myself, oh my God, votes still matter. They still matter. No matter what you think of the guy, if you hate the guy, you had to know Hillary Clinton had barges ready for fireworks to go off. The entire political system on both sides of the aisle saw her winning this. And this outsider came in. Those are the things that give me hope and make me believe that we always have a chance if we stand up, speak our truth, and stand in it. And I guarantee you, though it may be a game to you, if you keep running for mayor, watch out. You might find yourself in Donald Trump's position, winning that game and stuck with a job that you'll ask yourself whether you really wanted it or not.
Yeah, we'll see. Well, Del, it's been amazing catching up with you. I really do appreciate all the work that you and your team do. I really, honestly, and on the production value side of things, I look up to your team for that as well. You guys are bringing, the necessary, I think, look that is going to, which has allowed you to reach the audience that you, you have today, and I think we'll continue to. So I appreciate that. I appreciate your journalistic efforts and your openness to my questions. Guys, we've been talking with Del Bigtree of The High Wire. I'm sure all of you know him. I took your questions. I asked them. So hopefully you're happy, whether you liked his answers or not. But in reality, this conversation, the Activation Podcast, I started this after we heard about the Great Reset in 2020, 2021, so I could focus on solutions, to talk to you about things that we can actually do to get deeper with some of our guests, not just to focus on the problems. So I hope that some of you who maybe are focused on particular aspects of the COVID-19 conversation, vaccine conversation, have taken something positive out of this conversation and will go forward and do some good things. Until next time, remember, you are powerful, you are beautiful, and you are free. Peace.
Thank you for listening to the Activation Podcast, brought to you by the Conscious Resistance Network. You can find the archives of our show on Spotify, Pinecast, and at theconsciousresistance.com. Thanks for listening.